Chapter 26 Parley. Perrin rode Stepper out of camp, leading a large army. They didn't fly the Wolfhead banner. So far as he knew, his order to burn the thing had been followed. He was less certain of that decision now. There was an odd scent in the air, a staleness, like the inside of a room that had been left locked up for years. Stepper trotted onto the Johanna Road. Grady and Niald flanked Perrin directly, and they smelled eager.
"Niald, you're sure you're ready?"
Perrin asked as he turned the army to the southeast.
"I feel as strong as I ever have, my lord," Niald answered. "Strong enough to kill some white cloaks. I've always wanted a chance to do that."
"Only a fool looks for a chance to kill," Perrin said.
Yes, my lord," Niald said. "Though maybe I should mention..."
"No need to speak of that,"
Grady interrupted.
"What?"
Perrin asked. Grady looked embarrassed.
"It's nothing, I'm sure."
"Say it, Grady,"
Perrin said. The older man took a deep breath.
"We tried to make a gateway this morning to send refugees back, and it didn't work. Weaves fell apart and unraveled on us."
Perrin frowned.
"Other weaves work fine?"
"They do,"
Niald said quickly.
"Like I said, my lord," Grady said. "I'm sure it will work when we try again. Just not enough practice."
It wasn't likely that they'd need traveling to retreat from this battle, not with only two Ashaman in so large a force. But it was still disconcerting to lose the chance. It had better not happen with the other weaves. He was depending on Grady and Niald to confuse and disrupt the initial White Cloak charge.
"Maybe we should turn back,"
Perrin thought, but squelched the thought immediately. He didn't like having to make this decision. It made him sick to think of fighting man against man, when their real enemy was the Dark One. But his hand had been forced. They continued on, his hammer in its strap at his side. Hopperite implied it was no different from the axe. To the wolf, one weapon was like another. Manor-winged guards rode beside him, red-painted breastplates gleaming, looking like graceful hawks ready to swoop. Alejandra's soldiers, straightforward and determined, rode behind, like boulders poised to crush. Two Rivers' longbowmen, like sapling oaks, were nimble yet sturdy, Aiel like adders with razor teeth, Wise Ones reluctantly drawn along, Uncertain Thunderheads boiling with unpredictable energy. He didn't know if they would fight for him. The rest of his army was less impressive. Thousands of men with a range of experience and age, some mercenaries, some refugees from Malden, some women who had seen the maidens in Chafail and insisted on being trained alongside the men. Perrin hadn't stopped them. The last battle was coming. Who was he to forbid those who wanted to fight? He had considered forbidding Fail to come today, but he'd known how that would turn out. Instead, he placed her at the back, surrounded by Wise Ones and Chafail, accompanied by Aes Sedai. Perrin gripped his reins tighter, listening to the marching feet. Few of the refugees had armor. Arganda had called them light infantry. Perrin had another term for them. Innocents with blades. Why did they follow him? Couldn't they see that they would fall first? They trusted him. Light burn them, they all trusted him. He rested his hand on his hammer, smelling the damp air mixed with fear and excitement. The thunder of hooves and footsteps, reminding him of the dark sky. Thunder with no lightning. Lightning with no thunder. The battlefield was ahead, a broad green grassland, lined on the far end by troops in white. That White Cloak army wore silver breastplates, shined to perfection, their tabards and cloaks a pure white. This grassy plain was a good place to have a battle. It would also be a good place to plant crops. To understand a thing, you must understand its parts and its purpose. What had been the purpose of his war axe? to kill. That was why it had been made. That was all it had been good for. But the hammer was different. Perrin pulled Stepper up sharply. Beside him, the Ashaman stopped, and the entire column of troops started to pull to a halt. Groups bunched up as they slowed. Yelled orders replaced the sound of marching. The air was still, the sky overhead dreary. He couldn't smell the grass or the distant trees for the dust in the air and the men sweating in their armor. Horses snorted, a number of them nibbling at the grass. Others shuffled, catching the tension of their riders.
"My lord," Grady asked, "what is it?"
The White Cloak army was arranged already, a V formation of riders at the front. They waited, lances upright, ready to be lowered to spill blood.
"The axe only kills," Perrin said, "but the hammer can either create or kill. That is the difference."
It made sense to him suddenly. That was why he'd needed to throw the axe away. He could choose not to kill. He would not be pushed into this. He turned to Gaul, who stood with several maidens a short distance away.
"I want the Aes Sedai and Wise Ones up here now," Perrin hesitated. "Order the Aes Sedai, but ask the Wise Ones. Order the Two Rivers men up as well."
Gaul nodded and ran to do as asked. Perrin turned back to the White Cloaks. For all their faults, the White Cloaks considered themselves honorable. They wouldn't attack until Perrin was in position. The cluster of Wise Ones and Aes Sedai joined him at the front. Fael, he noticed, rode with them. Well, he had told her to stay with them. He held out a hand to her, inviting her next to him. The Two Rivers men came up on the flank of his force.
"Gaul said you were very polite," Adara noted to Perrin. "That means you want something from us that we will not want to do."
Perrin smiled.
"I want you to help me prevent this battle."
"You do not wish to dance the spears?" Adara asked. "I have heard some of what these men in white have done in the wetlands. I think they wear white to hide what is dark inside of them."
"They're confused," Perrin said. "Well, they're more than confused. They're like cursed frustrating. But we shouldn't be fighting them. Not with the last battle coming. If we squabble among ourselves, we will lose to the Dark One."
Adara laughed.
"I would like to see someone tell that to the Shido, Perrin Ebara. Or rather, I would like to have seen someone suggest that to you when they still held your wife."
"Well, the Shido needed killing," he said. "But I don't know if these White Cloaks do. Maybe they only need a good fright. I want you and the Aes Sedai to blast the ground in front of their army."
"You ask something you should not, Ebara," Seonid said sternly. "We will not take part in your battle."
The diminutive green met his eyes, voice crisp and curt.
"You're not taking part in battle," Perrin said. "You're helping stop one."
Seonid frowned.
"I'm afraid it would be the same in this case. If we attack the Earth, it would be using the One Power as a weapon. We could hurt those men. I'm sorry."
Perrin ground his teeth, but did not force them. The Wise Ones and Ashaman would probably be enough. He turned to the Two Rivers men.
"Tam, tell the men to knock arrows and be ready to launch a volley."
Tam nodded, sending a runner with the order. The Two Rivers men lined up. This was beyond the range of most bows, but a good pull on a Two Rivers longbow could manage it. Perrin nodded to the Wise Ones, then motioned toward the Ashaman. Before anything else could be said, the ground in front of the White Cloaks erupted. A rumble shook the meadow, dirt exploding into the air. Grady and Niald moved their horses forward. The White Cloak's horses reared and men shouted in terror. A small group of men at the very front didn't seem disturbed by the explosions, and they kept their horses under control. Those would be the leaders. Indeed, Perrin's eyes could make out the Lord Captain Commander himself sitting there. Dirt sprayed into the air again, falling to pelt the trench beneath. The wise ones wore that look of concentration that came with channeling. "Can one of you enhance my voice?" Perrin said.
"I can do it," Grady said. "I saw the Mahale do it once."
"Good," Perrin said, turning to Tam. "Once the channelers stop, tell the men to give me a couple of long volleys. Try and hit that trench." A few moments later, the explosions ended. The two Rivers men drew a volley and loosed it. Thick shafts rose in an arc, and soon the rift bristled with arrows. Perrin watched the White Cloak army. They had broken ranks, standing in disorder. A clank of armor matched by hoofbeats announced Arganda's arrival. The first captain of Gildan wore his plumed helm, his eyes hard beneath it.
"What was the point of that, if I may ask, Lord Ibarra?" He smelled hostile. "You just gave away our advantage. An ambush could have killed thousands and broken their initial charge."
"Yes," Perrin said.
Fael still rode at his other side.
"And they know it. Look at their lines, Arganda. They're worried. The White Cloaks are realizing what they'd have to go through to charge us. If I was willing to give them this as a warning burst, what was I holding back?"
"But that was the extent of what we can do," Fael said.
"They don't know that," Perrin grinned. "It would be stupid of us to commit everything we have in a warning blast like that."
Arganda held his tongue, though he obviously was thinking that very thing. He was a soldier to the bone, an axe. There was nothing wrong with that, but Perrin had to be the hammer. When he pointed, men like Arganda killed.
"Grady," Perrin said, "my voice, please. I wouldn't mind if our army could hear what I say, too."
"I can manage that," Grady said.
Perrin took a deep breath, then spoke.
"I am Perrin Ibarra,"
his voice boomed across the plain.
"I am friend to the Dragon Reborn, and I serve here at his command. I am marching to the last battle. Lord Captain Commander, you demanded I meet with you on your terms before, and I came. I ask you to return the honor here and meet as I request. If you are determined to kill me before I ride against the Shadow, at least do me the service of giving me one last chance to prevent spilling blood this day."
He nodded to Grady, and the man released his weave.
"Do we have a pavilion we could set up for parley?"
"Back at the camp," Fael said. "I can try a gateway," Neald said, knuckling his mustache,
or at least the thin bit of fur on his face that he called a mustache, waxed to points.
"Try it."
He concentrated. Nothing happened. The young man blushed furiously.
"Doesn't work. Not traveling or skimming."
"I see," Perrin said. "Well, let's send a rider back. We should be able to have the tent set up here in minutes. I don't know if they'll agree to meet, but I want to get ready in case they do. Bring Berylaine and Alejandra back as well, and perhaps someone with drinks and the chairs and table from my tent."
The proper orders were given, and a Two Rivers man, Rob Salter, rode off, maidens trailing after him. The White Cloaks seemed to be considering his proposition. Good. Arganda and most of the others spread out to pass the word about what was happening, though they couldn't possibly have missed Perrin's announcement. Everyone seemed to be doing what they should, so Perrin sat back in his saddle to wait. Fael saddled her horse up to him. She smelled intrigued.
"What?" Perrin asked.
"Something's changed about you. I'm trying to figure out what."
"I'm stalling," Perrin said. "I haven't made any decisions yet, but I don't want to kill these men. Not yet. Not unless I have to."
"They're not going to give any ground, husband," Fael said. "They've already judged you."
"We'll see," he said.
He looked up at the sky, thinking of the strange scent and the fact that the Ashaman gateways weren't working. Slayer was prowling this area in the wolf dream, and there was that wall of glass. Something felt very wrong on the wind, and his senses itched at him. Be wary. Be prepared. The hammer could kill or create. He didn't know which situation this was yet. He didn't intend to strike until he did. Galad sat on the grassy plain that should have been a field of battle, looking at the trench torn in the ground, bristling with hundreds of arrows. He was prepared for Aes Sedai, and Aes Sedai could not hurt someone unless she or her warder was in danger, and Galad had given very specific orders to his people not to engage or even go near Aes Sedai. If the children saw Aes Sedai, they were to stop and nod their heads, turning their weapons away. If his men showed plainly that they would not harm Aes Sedai, then the sisters should be useless in battle. Many of the children did not believe this. They called the stories of the three oaths deliberate fabrications. They hadn't lived in the White Tower. Galad didn't like most Aes Sedai, and he certainly didn't trust them, but he knew that the oaths did hold. Galad's men moved back into line, muttering. He raised his looking glass, inspecting Ibarra's front line. Men in black coats. Several Aiel women, including one of those who had come with Ibarra to their first meetings. A channeler, no doubt. He imagined the ground exploding beneath his charging forces, knocking the cavalry into the air, others falling into the trench, while the later lines stalled in confusion, prey to those impressive longbows. Bornholt rode up to Galad, his face angry. "We aren't really going to parley, are we?" Galad lowered his looking glass.
"Yes, I think we are."
"But we already met with him," Bornholt said. "You said you wanted to see those eyes as proof he was Shadowspawn, and you saw them. What more do you need?"
Baiar said, nudging his mount closer. He often acted as a guard to Galad these days.
"He can't be trusted, my lord Captain Commander."
Galad nodded at the trench.
"He could have destroyed us with that attack."
"I agree with Baiar," Bornholt said. "He wants to draw you out, then kill you to demoralize us."
Galad nodded slowly.
"That's possible."
He turned to Lord Captain Harnish, who rode nearby.
"If I die, I want you to take command and charge. Attack without mercy. I repeal my order to avoid Aes Sedai. Kill anyone who seems to be channeling. Make it a priority. It's possible that we do not understand what is happening here."
"But you're still going?" Bornholt asked.
"Yes," Galad said.
He had let Bornholt and Baiar goad him into battle, but now he wondered if he'd been too hasty. He had seen those eyes, and had heard the testimonies of both his children and some of those who had ridden with Ibarra. It had seemed clear that attacking was the thing to do. But Ibarra was right. He had come to meet with Galad when asked. Perhaps there was a way to prevent bloodshed. Galad did not believe it, but if there was even a chance, then delaying was the right thing. It was as simple as that. Bornholt did not seem pleased. His anger at the man who had killed his father was understandable, but it could not be allowed to guide the children.
"You may come with me," Galad said, nudging his horse forward. "That goes for you as well, Child Baiar. The Lord's captain should remain behind, scattered through the men, lest Ibarra leave us without leaders."
Harnish saluted. Bornholt reluctantly fell into place beside Galad, as did Baiar, whose eyes burned with a wild zeal that matched Bornhold's anger. Both had experienced defeat and indignity at the hands of this Perrin Ibarra. Galad also took 50 children as guards, riding in formation behind him. A pavilion was set up by the time they arrived. Flat-topped and simple, it had four poles stretching the brownish-gray canvas. There was a small square table under it, accompanied by two chairs. Ibarra sat on one side of the table. He stood up as Galad approached. Today the large man wore a green coat and brown trousers, both well-crafted but plain, and had that hammer slung at his waist. The clothes had an earthy sensibility to them. No, this was not a man of palaces, but a man of fields and forests, a woodsman who had risen to be a lord. A pair of Two Rivers men stood at the back of the pavilion, holding massive Two Rivers longbows. They were said to be independent farmers and herdsmen of old, sturdy stock, and they had chosen this Perrin Ebarra to lead them. Galad walked toward the pavilion. Beyer and Bornhold joined him, though the other 50 remained mounted outside. Unlike their last meeting, there were Aes Sedai here, 3 who he could spot. A short Kyrianan woman, a slim, pleasant-looking woman in a simple dress, a stocky woman whose numerous braids meant she was likely from Terabon. They stood with a group of Aiel women in shawls, guarded by a handful of maidens of the spear. Well, those Aiel did give credence to the claim that Ebarra had been sent by the dragon reborn. Galad rested his hand casually on the pommel of his sword, looking over the pavilion's other occupants. And then he froze. A strikingly beautiful woman stood behind Ebarra's chair. No, not beautiful. Gorgeous. Lustrous black hair streamed down past her neck. It seemed to shine. She wore a red gown, thin enough to accentuate her form and deeply cut enough to expose swelling bosom. And those eyes, so dark, with long, beautiful lashes. He seemed pulled toward them. Why hadn't this woman come last time?
"You appear surprised," Ebarra said as he sat back down. He had a gruff voice. "The lady first is here at the Lord Dragon's command, as I am. Didn't you notice the flag of Mayenne above my forces?"
Galad snapped his mouth closed, executing a bow to the woman. "Berylaine Sir Paeandreg Peyron?" She was said to be a marvelous beauty, but those tales did her little justice. Galad tore his eyes from her and forced himself to take the seat opposite Ebarra. He had to concentrate on his foe. Those golden eyes were as unsettling as he remembered. So strange to look into. Yes, this man couldn't be anything other than Shadow Spawn. Why would so many follow such a creature? Why would she follow such a creature?
"Thank you for coming," Ebarra said. "Our last meeting was hasty. We'll do it proper this time. You should be made aware that this woman beside me is Aleandra Maritha Kigaran, Queen of Gildan, Blessed of the Light, Defender of Garen's Wall."
So, that stately, dark-haired woman was the current Queen of Gildan. Of course, with the unrest here lately, there were probably a half-dozen people trying to claim the throne. She was pretty, but completely overshadowed by Berylaine. Perrin nodded toward a third woman.
"This is Fail Ni Bashir Tebara, my wife and cousin to the Queen of Saldaea."
Ebarra's wife regarded Galad with suspicion. Yes, she was obviously Saldaean, by that nose. Bornhold and Beyer hadn't known of her royal connections. Two monarchs in the tent, and both behind Ebarra. Galad rose from his seat and gave a bow to Aleandra to match the one he'd given Berylaine.
"Your Majesty?"
"You're very polite, Lord Captain Commander," Berylaine said. "And those were elegant bows. Tell me, where did you receive such training?"
Her voice was like music.
"In the court of Andor, m'lady. I am Galad Damodred, stepson of the departed Queen Morghese and half-brother of Elaine Trakand, the rightful queen."
"Ah," Perrin said. "About time I put a name to you. Wish you'd said that last time."
Berylaine stared into his eyes, and she smiled, looking as if she wanted to step forward. She caught herself, however.
"Galad Damodred. Yes, I thought I recognized something in your face. How is your sister?"
"I hope she is well," Galad said. "I have not seen her in some time." "Elaine's fine," Perrin said gruffly. Last I heard, which was only a few days back, she'd secured her claim to the throne. I wouldn't be surprised if she's looking to marry Rand by now, if she can pull him away from whatever realm he's conquering.
Behind Galad, Bayar hissed softly. Had Ibarra intended insult by indicating a relationship between Elaine and the Dragon Reborn? Unfortunately, Galad knew his sister all too well. She was impulsive, and she had shown an unseemly fascination with young Althor.
My sister may do as she wishes, Galad said, surprised at how easily he contained his annoyance at both her and the Dragon Reborn. We are here to discuss you, Perrin Ibarra, and your army.
Ibarra leaned forward, laying two hands on the table.
We both know this isn't about my army.
What is it about, then? Galad asked.
Ibarra met his gaze with those unnatural eyes of his.
It's about a pair of children of the light I killed 2 years back. Now every time I turn around, it seems that there is a group of you snapping at my heels.
It wasn't often that a murderer was so open about what he had done. Galad heard the rasp of a sword being drawn behind him and raised a hand.
Child Bornholt, you will control yourself. Two children of the light, Shadowspawn,
Bornholt spat.
And what of my father?
I had nothing to do with his death, Bornholt, Ibarra said. Jephram was killed by the Seanchan, unfortunately. For a white cloak, he seemed like a reasonable man, though he was planning to hang me.
He was to hang you for the murders you just confessed to, Galad said calmly, shooting a glance at Bornholt.
The man snapped his sword back in its sheath, but his face was red.
They weren't murders, Ibarra said. They attacked me. I fought back.
That is not what I have heard, Galad said. What game was this man playing?
I have sworn testimony that you were hiding underneath a cleft in the rock. When the men asked you to come out, you jumped out screaming and attacked them without provocation.
Oh, there was provocation, Ibarra said. Your white cloaks killed a friend of mine.
The woman who was with you? Galad asked. From what I hear, she escaped safely.
He'd been shocked when Bornholt had mentioned that name. Egwene Alvir. Another woman who seemed to prefer dangerous company.
Not her, Perrin said. A friend named Hopper. And after him, a companion of his. They were wolves.
The man was condemning himself further.
You make friends of wolves, known to be creatures of the shadow?
Wolves aren't of the shadow, Ibarra said. They hate Shadowspawn as much as any man I've known.
And how do you know this?
Ibarra said nothing further. There was more there. Bayar said this man seemed able to command wolves, run with them, like a wolf himself. That testimony was part of what had persuaded Galad that battle was the only recourse. It seemed that Bayar's words had not been exaggeration. But there was no need, yet, to dwell on that. Ibarra had admitted to murder.
I don't accept the killing of wolves as something to exonerate you, Galad said. Many hunters slay wolves who attack their flocks or threaten their lives. The children did nothing wrong. Your attack on them, therefore, was unprovoked murder.
There was far more to it than that, Ibarra said. But I doubt I'll convince you of that.
I cannot be convinced of something that isn't true, Galad said.
And you won't leave me alone, either, Ibarra said.
We are at an impasse, then, Galad said. You have confessed to crimes that I, as a servant of justice, must see righted. I cannot walk away. You see why I felt further parley was useless?
What if I were willing to stand trial? Perrin asked.
Ibarra's bold-nosed wife rested a hand on his shoulder. He reached up and laid his hand on it, but did not turn away from Galad.
If you will come and accept punishment from us for what you've done, Galad said,
it would mean execution. Surely the creature wouldn't give himself up. At the back of the pavilion, a group of servants had arrived and were preparing tea. Tea. At a war parley. Obviously, Ebarra had little experience with this kind of thing.
Not punishment, Ebarra said sharply. A trial. If I am proven innocent, I go free, and you, the Lord Captain Commander, instruct your men to stop hounding me. Especially Bornhold and that one behind you who growls like a pup seeing his first leopard.
And if you are proven guilty?
That depends.
Don't listen to him, my Lord Captain Commander, Bayar said. He promised to give himself to us once before, then betrayed his word.
I did not, Ebarra said. You did not fulfill your part of the bargain.
Galad slapped the table. This is useless. There will be no trial.
Why not? Ebarra demanded. You talk of justice, but won't offer me a trial.
And who would judge it? Galad asked.
Would you trust me to do so? Of course not, Perrin said. But Aleandra can. She's a queen.
And your companion, Galad said. I mean her no insult, but I fear she would acquit you without hearing evidence. Even the lady first would not be adequate. Though I would, of course, trust her word, I fear that my men would not.
Light, but that woman was beautiful. He glanced at her for a moment and found her blushing as she regarded him. It was faint, but he was sure he saw it. He found himself blushing as well.
The Aes Sedai, then, Ebarra said.
Galad tore his eyes away from Berylane and looked at Ebarra, giving him a flat stare.
If you think that a judgment by one from the White Tower would satisfy my men, you know little of the Children of the Light, Perrin Ebarra.
Ebarra's eyes grew hard. Yes, he knew that. It was too bad. A trial would have been a tidy end to this. A serving woman approached the table with two cups of tea, but there was no need. This second parley was over.
You're right, then, Ebarra said, looking frustrated. This meeting was pointless.
No, Galad said, stealing another glance at Berylane. Not pointless for me.
He knew more of Ebarra's strength. That would help him in battle. Beyond that, it had been right to delay fighting for a short time to make certain it was needed. There was still plenty of light in the day for the fighting to proceed. But what of that woman? The lady first. He forced himself to look away. It was difficult. Galad stood and bowed to Aleandra, then to Berylane. He moved to leave. Then he heard a gasp. Oddly, it came from the serving woman who had brought the tea. Galad glanced at her. It was Morghese. Galad froze, completely still. He'd been trained by swordmaster after swordmaster never to let his surprise overwhelm him, but at that moment their careful training was for naught. That was his stepmother. That red-gold hair he had tugged as a child. That face, so beautiful and strong. Those eyes. Those were her eyes. A ghost? He had heard the stories, manifestations of the Dark One's evil returning the dead to life. But nobody else in the pavilion seemed uneasy, and this woman was too real. Hesitantly, Galad reached out and touched the apparition on the cheek. The skin was warm.
Galad, she said, what are you doing here? How?
She cut off as he seized her in an embrace, causing those around him on both sides to jump in surprise. She jumped too. She lived.
How?
I killed Valda, Galad thought immediately. Killed him for the death of my mother, who is not dead. I have done evil.
No. Valda had deserved to die for the assault on Morghese. He had spoken to children, but they'd also been sure she was dead. He would sort that out later. Right now, he needed to stop embarrassing himself in front of his men. He released his stepmother, but she kept hold of his arm. She looked dazed. He had rarely seen her that way. Perrin Ebarra had stood up and was watching them with a frown.
You know Megden?
Megden? Galad asked,
She wore a simple dress and no jewelry. Was she trying to hide as a servant?
Ibarra, this is Morgaeus Trakand, defender of the realm, protector of the people, high seat of House Trakand. She is your queen.
That brought a stillness to the pavilion. Ibarra scratched at his beard thoughtfully. His wife watched Morgaeus with eyes wide, either shocked or angry.
Megden, Ibarra said. Is this true?
She lifted her chin, staring Ibarra in the eyes. How could they not see the queen in her?
I am Morgaeus Trakand, she said. But I have renounced my throne in favor of Elaine. Before the light, I will never again claim the crown.
Galad nodded. Yes. She must have feared that Ibarra would use her against Andor.
I'm taking you back to my camp, mother,
Galad said, still watching Ibarra.
Then we can discuss the way you were treated by this man.
She turned level eyes on Galad.
An order, Galad? Have I no say in the matter?
He frowned, leaning in and speaking in a whisper.
Does he have others captive? What leverage does he have over you?
She shook her head and replied softly,
This man is not what you think he is, Galad. He's rough cut, and I certainly don't like what he's doing to Andor, but he is no friend of the Shadow. I have more to fear from your associates than from Perrin Ibarra.
Yes, she did have reason to distrust the children. Good reason.
Will you come with me, my lady? I promise you that you may leave and return to Ibarra's camp at any time. Whatever you suffered from the children in the past, you will be safe now. I vow this.
Morgaeus gave him a nod.
Damodred, Ibarra said. Wait a moment.
Galad turned, laying his hand on his sword pommel again. Not as a threat, but a reminder. Many of those in the pavilion had begun to whisper.
Yes,
Galad asked.
You wanted a judge, Ibarra said. Would you accept your mother in that position?
Galad didn't hesitate. Of course. She'd been a queen since her 18th name day, and he had seen her sit in judgment. She was fair. Harsh, but fair. But would the other children accept her? She'd been trained by the Aes Sedai. They'd see her as one of them. A problem. But if it gave a way out of this, perhaps he could make them see the truth.
I would,
Galad said.
And if I vouched for her, my men would as well.
Well, Ibarra said, I'd accept her too.
Both men turned to Morgaeus. She stood in her simple yellow dress, looking more a queen by the moment.
Perrin, she said, if I sit in judgment, I will not temper my decisions. You took me in when we needed shelter, and for that I am appreciative. But if I decide that you have committed murder, I will not hold back my decision.
That will do, Ibarra said. He seemed sincere.
My lord Captain Commander,
Bayar said softly in Galad's ear, sounding fervent,
I fear this would be a farce. He's not said he would submit to punishment.
No, I have not, Ibarra said.
How had he heard those whispers?
It would be meaningless. You think me a dark friend and a murderer. You wouldn't accept my word on taking punishment, not unless I was in your custody, which I won't allow.
See?
Bayar said more loudly.
What is the point?
Galad met Ibarra's golden eyes again.
It will give us a trial, he said, growing more certain. And legal justification. I'm beginning to see, Child Bayar. We must prove our claims. Otherwise, we are no better than Asunawa.
But the trial will not be fair.
Galad turned to the tall soldier.
Are you questioning my mother's impartiality?
The gaunt man froze, then shook his head.
No, my lord Captain Commander.
Galad turned back to Ibarra.
I ask Queen Aleandra to grant that this trial be legally binding in her realm.
If Lord Ebara requests it, I will.
She sounded uncomfortable.
I do request it, Alejandra, Perrin said. But only if Damodred agrees to release all of my people that he's holding. Keep the supplies, but let the people go, as you promised me you would before.
Very well, Galad said. It will happen once the trial begins. I promise it. When will we meet?
Give me a few days to prepare.
In 3 days, then, Galad said. We hold the trial here, in this pavilion, in this place.
Bring your witnesses, Ebara said. I'll be here.